Buenos dias, world, from the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. I'm Marco Wendt.
And I'm Rick Schwartz. And we're your hosts for Season 3 of Amazing Wildlife, a show from iHeartRadio Ruby Studio and the global conservation organization behind the San Diego Zoo and the San Diego Zoo Safari Park.
Listen as we dive into the efforts here in San Diego and spotlight the heroes working worldwide to care for the species you know and love.
Listen to Amazing Wildlife on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to IFHPodcastNetwork.com.
What is it you want, Barry? What do you want? You want the moon? Just say the word and I'll throw a lasso around it and pull it down.
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
I see dead people.
All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it! My life has value!
Filmmaking Conversations with Damian Swaby is part of the critical conversations currently taking place across the film community. The podcast reaches out to the next generation of filmmakers who continue to look for inspiration and guidance. Remember to hit the subscribe button and leave a comment in the comments section. Share the podcast with friends and family and have a great day. And now, over to the host of the show, Damian Swaby.
Today on Filmmaking Conversations, I'll be speaking to Missy Hernandez. She is a filmmaker, writer, actor, and television professor in the Cinema and Television Arts Department at Columbia College, Chicago. Her most recent film and television credits include associate producer for Terrence Nance Peabody, award-winning television series Random Acts of Flyness, produced in partnership with A24 for HBO, and writer and co-producer of a feature-length narrative documentary hybrid and social thriller entitled American Thief. So let's take a listen to our conversation right here, right now.
I came to filmmaking by way of theater. I started as an actor and really wasn't seeing the kind of roles or the kind of stories that I wanted to be a part of being told, and realized that I have always loved telling stories and writing stories, and maybe I'm pulled more in the direction of screenwriting and screenwriting as opposed to playwriting, which I think is interesting. So I went to school for screenwriting, and in between undergrad and college, I took more acting courses, and it was again the same situation of not seeing the stories I was most interested in being told. Or interesting stories for women or for minority characters. And just realizing that I had to be on the flip side of things if I wanted to see a change on the screen. So then I went to graduate school at Columbia University to study, get an MFA in screenwriting, and also be able to teach, because I think that's a big part of the pipeline as well, is being able to encourage young folks that they can tell their own stories and be that change that they want to see or initiate that change that they want to see. So then in grad school, just being very vocal about what I wanted to do and the kind of projects that I wanted to work on, and then people letting me know when those opportunities popped up, whether it was an internship or a collaboration. And the first feature, the trailer for American Thief, which brought me here today, that was a collaboration that was started in graduate school. With some friends who wanted to make a feature and wanted advice on the screenplay and invited me to a table reading, and then giving honest but helpful criticism pretty much inspired them to bring me on board as a writer for the project to help them fix some script issues. And then I became involved in the production side of it and producing it, ended up being a co-producer on the film, and, you know, an equally billed writer on the film by the time that we were done with it, because it was a very different approach to filmmaking than any of us had done before. We're kind of writing it as things were evolving in the world around us, and reacting to and responding to that in the script and the storytelling was a really fun adventure and a really stressful adventure. But I think turned out a really interesting project that I think people are going to discover as we go along. Since it was released during the pandemic, it kind of cut a lot of things short. But so that's how I got started. And then in that process, because the making of that film took about 5 years, being pulled into other projects and taking other opportunities in film and television, whether it was working on a professor's production that they were doing, or hearing about a television series that needed an assistant. And then, you know, once you're on the job, doing a great job and being promoted or asked to do other projects or other positions on a particular project, and just being present and ready, really, is what it was for me, and taking the opportunities as they come.
So you said before that you weren't seeing certain types of people on screen, and you wanted to change that. You wanted a different narrative in terms of women and minorities being on television. What type of people and characters were you seeing on screen, and what changes did you want to see?
Well, as a Latina, there was a Latina who could pass for white, but has kept her ethnic name. I had agents and representation that I had as an actor when I was very young, didn't know what to do with me, because if I changed my name, they could maybe put me out for the leading characters that were most often white. But with as a Latina, they wanted me to like spice it up or like kind of put on a caricature. And it didn't suit who I was as an actor or a person.
So they wanted,
so they would not put me out for like Latina roles, but they didn't feel comfortable putting me out for roles that, you know, were, and it doesn't necessarily say like Caucasian, but it's just the leading role, because they assume that it's going to be a certain way. Typecasting is a huge problem that I have just in general, because it doesn't necessarily help anybody find the right actor for a role. So that's a little bit of a sidebar. But a lot of my actor friends that are minorities, seeing the same types of roles, and that being almost all it is. So if we'll be celebrating, oh, I got my first Law and Order, I got like my first like guest star, and it's the gang member, or it's the mom with like 7 kids who, that kind of thing, or the crackhead, and it's like, but you're a Juilliard trained actor, or you're, you know, you just got out of Yale, and it's comical. I was hanging out with friends, this is right before I started grad school for screenwriting, hanging out at a bar, and they just wrapped on an episode for a procedural, and you know, somebody's from Yale, somebody's from NYU, somebody's from Juilliard, and they're like super cool guys. And it's like, oh, what's the episode? It's like, oh, we play gang members who do this. And we're like, and then it's like, they just sunk. And I was like, okay, this is why I have to be on the flip side of things, because these are fantastic actors that don't get to showcase what they can actually do. And yeah, there are, you know, those are stories to be told, but when that's all you're seeing as a story that you can embody, it has a psychological effect on people who are just watching television, and it limits people being able to envision or dream of their potential and what they can be if all the exterior stories are very specific streamlines of you can be this, this, or that. And it's hard to break through when you haven't seen what you can be. So seeing, you know, I have a lot of characters that are doctors or are, you know, just, you know, farmers or humans, where it doesn't have to be a tragedy necessarily. Or if it is, it's told from a different perspective that isn't I don't know, like looking down on, or
yeah,
looking at a distance.
So do you think really it limits people's potential consciously or subconsciously when they see these images constantly on the screen?
I think it's more subconsciously. At least when at a certain point, like I think when people are coming into their own person, it starts to switch, usually like around, actually I think kids are pretty aware of it as well. There's an awakening. It's like, why am I only seeing myself as this? Or why am I not seeing myself at all? In some cases, when it comes to representation, just like the breadth of storytelling, I think, limits certain things, because for a lot of folks, depending on where they live, that could be their first introduction to a group of people, whether it's an ethnicity or a race, and people take in that information. If they're not seeing what it was really out there, it gives a skewed idea of what a community or a country is really all about.
So when you had script consultancy for the group of writers on American Thief, how did they take your feedback? Because some people can be quite touchy about feedback and constructive criticism. How did it go for you?
Well, they were friends to begin with. So it's always like the nervousness of like, okay, I have to, in my training, like you have to give feedback that's actually going to help, not just make somebody feel good and then not go the extra mile. So really just asking the questions and finding out what it is that they wanted to do with the story, I think, before anything else. So that the feedback that I'm getting is helping them with the story that they want to tell, as opposed to what I think is going to work because of whatever I think stories should be. And knowing that they're going about it in a very different way, in terms of receiving whatever energy is coming out. It's very much a hybrid documentary fiction. So figuring out a way to move forward within that, knowing that it's going to be a long process, especially in the editing. So a lot of it was looking at characters and diving deeper with the characters, and being open to working with the actors to see what they brought to the table, because the actors were, you know, incredible humans in their own right, and really informed the script a lot. There's a grandma character who was originally written as a very cookie cutter grandma, like literally baking cookies for the young protagonist and like, you know, get home safe kind of grandma. But the actress we cast is a community activist who does amazing work. Great. And had so much to contribute. And so there's a beautiful intervention scene that is really shaped around the kind of work that she does as a community activist, and bringing people back to the community who have just been released from prison so that they can reintegrate and, you know, feel safe and welcome back. And it's a beautiful scene that I think is really the centerpiece of the film in many ways, because it walks that line of being both documentary but slightly fictionalized, but the characters are real people who participate in these kind of interventions all the time. And really just like in some cases, just stepping back and letting the actors live through these experiences that we as storytellers couldn't write without them. We're just kind of like shaping and learning in the process. And that's, I think, what was really beautiful about the documentary side of this film. And then it was, okay, so this is what we got documentary wise. How do we make this connect to the other story elements that we're going to keep? So it was a lot of things ended up on the cutting room floor as we started bringing in more documentary pieces and letting the actors help us shape the story that it was becoming as we went along.
See, I love that idea of the documentary side of it and the narrative side of it coming together like that, because it, in my opinion, it makes the film look so big. you know, it makes it look like such a huge, important story. Whereas sometimes on, I don't know the budget, but maybe micro budget or indie film budget productions, we're unable to make large scale film in that way. How did you cope as a co-producer on the project as well as a writer? And what was your duties as a co-producer? Because many of us know you could watch a film and there could be five producers on it sometimes. I, you know, I had a laugh of one of my friends. He made a film and he's got 12 producers on it. And I was just like, come on, man. 12 producers. Stop handing out producer roles to friends. Come on, you know. But what was your roles on the film?
There are many roles, and ended up with a co-production, co-producing credit. But a lot of it was having the story fit what we had and coming up with things that would work on the fly or in a very short notice. And in between a lot of, because it ended up being a sizable budget for like an ultra low indie budget, but we thought it was going to be a micro budget when we started.
Yeah.
But waiting in between, when we're waiting for funds to come in, whether through grants or through private investment, there were some breaks in the production and really taking that time to see what was happening in the world, see where we were with the story and figuring out, okay, how do we make these things work? And the story, if you've only seen the trailer is a little misleading because the way that the story unfolds, it's not a typical three-act structure that we're used to seeing in film. It's what I call a hyperlink structure.
Wow, what's
that? Because
it
feels like, you know, when you're searching something on the internet and you open up a new tab and it takes you somewhere else and then you open up another tab, it's like having multiple tabs open at once.
Okay.
And then at a certain point, like going back to, okay, how did I get here? And going back to the original tab open. So it's, and it's interesting because I feel like young folks who are used to having multiple tabs open tend to gravitate or get the film much more quickly than older folks who are like, there's so many things happening. What's going on?
Yeah.
And it does become an ensemble piece. And some threads don't intentionally do not connect or resolve in a way that is as clean as you might assume that would happen in a traditional, more Hollywood or Hollywood indie film. So that's the other thing that we like to do that I helped consult on is like, if it's going to be a different structure, how do we actually talk about it? How do we construct it in a way that, you know, shows that this is what we want, even if it's not what the audience expects or wants. It shows that it's intentional filmmaking and intentional editing. So a lot of my duties as co-producer was how we talk about this film that is not necessarily what people are going to expect, given the trailer or given what we've been trained, not formally, but through whatever we're seeing on streaming platforms or just growing up in a westernized society, what we expect our films to give us as audience members and playing with that, because that's part of the fun that we have as filmmakers is playing with audience expectations and subverting them and seeing what happens.
That sounds amazing. I've never ever heard of that hyperlink analogy before in terms of film structure. I might have to nick it if you don't mind and apply it to one of my own projects. But I really like the sound of it. And I can see how maybe younger viewers appreciate it more than older viewers, that's for sure. So were you also part of the casting process at all? Were you a part of kind of like getting the location manager on board, or is that something you did yourself? How much more input did you have? Because it sounds like you have a really central role in the production of this film.
With casting, a lot of the casting was mostly friends that we had worked with before. So I knew a lot of the actors that were involved. And at a certain point with a lot of the smaller characters, we ended up casting other filmmakers, filmmaker friends. I feel like there's, at one point, I think we counted 12 cameos from former classmates.
Love it.
Some of which got cut, but they're oftentimes filmmakers make great actors, whether or not they believe it, because they understand the process, especially in indie filmmaking. that's going to be a little longer, that's going to be messy, and they're chill about it because they've been in the same boat. So that was one of the reasons for casting a lot of friends. And the other was we were rewriting scenes as we were going, depending on what was happening in the world and in the country or even in the city. So having to find people on the fly, kind of down to the wire, and usually fellow filmmakers were the ones that were most available. So yeah, there was a lot of, who's around, who would be interesting.
And as you said, they understand the process. I'm happy for you that you're in that situation, because it kind of takes the weight a bit off people's shoulders. Because if you have people filling in like that understand the process, then potentially not going to maybe let you down, or you know, be kind of maybe somewhat awkward in the situation, whatever. It's like such a relief of stress that's not going to happen if you've got people on your side like that. Mm-hmm. And earlier you mentioned you thought it's best to say to the people involved, to ask them what they want from the film, what the story is to them. But for you personally, coming on as producer and writer, what do you want from this film?
Have you thought of upgrading your cinematography game? Would you like to have an ASC cinematographer mentor you for free? Join veteran cinematographer Suki Madunzovic, ASC, Disney, Pixar, FX Networks, Netflix, American Horror Story, as he teaches you how to create beautiful images using three lighting techniques he has mastered on film sets over his 30-plus years in the film industry. Each technique uses basic, low-cost lighting equipment so that anyone can achieve beautiful visuals no matter your project's budget. If you want to take your cinematography to the next level, visit filmmakingconversations.com to sign up for instant access.
I wanted this film to explore what else we can do with narrative. And I think that's one of the reasons I became a teacher, is because it gives a little bit more freedom to make films that are outside of Hollywood and still be sustainable as a career. But really playing with what a narrative can do and what we think a story should be. So I was really excited to explore, as I said before, a hyperlink structure as opposed to a traditional three-act structure, and see how we could subvert what people expect to happen to characters, or just really playing with not just in terms of story and how a character is written, but also how a character is filmed. Like the angles, like certain things, it's like, oh, if you shoot an actor this way, you're going to expect this person to be the hero by the end of the film, and then subverting that. Just getting complex characters and playing. It was a lot of play and experimenting with this film. And I think definitely informed our follow-up film, which is still a little bit hybrid, but much more documentary than American Thief, and much quicker. And now we're moving back into straight narrative. So lots of lessons learned on this first feature, and still working with the same director.
And teaching. Why teaching? I mean, you've got these great projects under your belt. So what's made you go back or go to become a teacher?
Always part of my, not just filmmaking plan, but kind of just mission, I guess. As I mentioned before, it's part of the pipeline. It's not just about me telling my stories, because that's very small and doesn't make...
Buenos dias, world, from the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. I'm Marco Wendt.
And I'm Rick Schwartz. And we're your hosts for Season 3 of Amazing Wildlife, a show from iHeartRadio Ruby Studio and the global conservation organization behind the San Diego Zoo and the San Diego Zoo Safari Park.
Listen as we dive into the efforts here in San Diego and spotlight the heroes working worldwide to care for the species you know and love.
Listen to Amazing Wildlife on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nearly as big as an impact as me helping young people learn how to tell their stories. Because, I mean, yeah, there's something we said, be like the first fill in the blank person to make the story or get a certain level of success, but it's beyond that, like, how are we bringing other people up? And yes, you know, when in a position, whether it's a associate producer on a series where I get to, you know, bring up interns and make sure that we're getting diverse interns, so people are getting a chance to work on a television set with amazing talent, or on a film set, making sure that, you know, people are getting their first chance, whether it's students or just people who are interested but have never had the opportunity. There's so much more of that can happen in the classroom. Representation in the classroom is also important for students to feel empowered to write their own story without being told, oh, I haven't seen this before, in a negative way. If I haven't seen this before, that means it's not going to work. Having somebody say, I haven't seen this before, you have to keep going with this. This is different. This is great. Or really asking students why they're telling their stories and making sure that they're connected to it, whatever the case may be. So I think it's the being able to be a mentor, because it took me a long time to find just figures to look up to, is really nice. I feel like it'll have greater impact than just me going out there to make just my projects, if that makes sense.
Complete sense. That's really... It says a lot about you. It says about where your heart and your spirit is, that you're able to think like that and do what you're doing. Because a lot of people just don't do that. You know, they just go on their own journey and do what they need to do. But I understand completely what you mean about diversity in the classroom. You growing up, who did you look up to?
They're few and far between. I mean, we had Rita Moreno was the Puerto Rican in West Side Story, who won an Oscar.
Oh,
I was like, wow, it's great. Yeah. But the rest of the cast were Caucasian and in like a very particular shade of brown face, including Rita Moreno, who was put in dark brown makeup to play a Puerto Rican. So it's there are few and far between. And then it was a lot of people in front of, or not a lot. There are like a handful of people in front of the camera who... There's like what's like the in the 90s there was like the Latin explosion where there's a Ricky Martin, J-Lo, and but it didn't quite translate into film so much. And then I mean J-Lo's an actress obviously, but a lot of the roles that she played were not Latina, and that also was just like, huh. So it just raised, not that you can only play Latina if you're Latina, but it's usually she's playing the wedding planner. She's playing certain roles that were like the traditional rom-com type roles. She wasn't, she was not playing her own ethnicity. So, it's in the writing. It's not in, you know, it's what's available. So kudos for her to landing those fun, fantastic roles. At a pretty young age, teenagery mind, it's like, well, why isn't this character what she is? Or why aren't there more characters that aren't the maid, that aren't the mom of seven kids, that aren't the person in rehab characters for people like me? So it was really about characters and wanting to see characters and play characters and have those kinds of role models in narrative fiction. Because I had those role models in life, but I wasn't seeing them on screen. And to see, why can't I just see like a nice dad who has like a garden and is struggling because his kid wants to move to a different country. That's a beautiful, simple narrative. Why don't we get to simple narratives that aren't about tragedy, or aren't about, border crossing from a very particular point of view?
So tell us about The Last Election.
Yes, The Last Election. The full title is The Last Election and Other Love Stories. We added a little love story into the mix within the documentary. That really was born out of the anxiety of the 2020 elections and what was going to unfold. My partner, who's the director of American Thief and one of the writers, is like, I have to make a movie because I can't sit at home and just wait. So about a month and a half before the elections in the US, he came up with this idea. And I said, this is a great idea, but we have to make it small. Whereas American Thief took us about 5 years. Let's try to have this in the bag in 5 months. We're close to that. I think we'll have it completely wrapped about 6-7 months. So we came up with a narrative conceit that would house a documentary story, and hopefully keep the audience engaged, using the same young actors from American Thief who are just playing themselves. And under the narrative conceit of they are amateur podcasters who are competing for a podcast competition, and they got the funds to make a pilot podcast with the potential to have an ongoing series broadcast and paid for. And so their podcast that they're shooting or recording is titled The Last Election, and it's the two characters in Times Square from sunrise to on election day to sunrise the next day, getting as many interviews from real New Yorkers on the street as they can to get a better perspective of what real people were actually thinking about or feeling about the elections in the US. And yeah, so we had two camera crews, one following the young men and the other just grabbing as many interviews as possible as if they were the young men themselves. And had our fingers crossed that we'd have enough interesting material for a feature. And we did. It was either going to be a short or a feature, and we had enough for a feature. And I think it's super interesting and surprising, because we had a hunch that we would not know the results of the presidential elections in the US on the day.
Yeah.
We didn't know it would take 4 or 5 days. But it's really interesting because people were very certain in their interviews, and most people were completely wrong. And from very, very different perspectives that we weren't anticipating. It's a pretty fascinating film, because you can see the split that you saw in the polls when the results came out. And I think that was surprising even to us when we were getting the interviews.
Well, congratulations for being able to make a feature. Because I feel sometimes when you think, oh, it'll be a short, but if we get enough quality footage, then we'll make it into a feature. And often a lot of people are like, okay, it's going to be a short. But you managed to be able to make a feature. So that's brilliant. I'm happy that your days were spent and the crews and the actors' days spent well, and you was able to do that. So you got the kind of feedback you got, but just for clarity, I'm guessing you're not a Trump voter.
No, I am not.
Okay, I knew you weren't, I'm just kidding. So in that case, when it comes to editing it and getting it out there, is this fully against Trump, or is it more of a kind of observational look at what's going on? I mean, what type of direction have you gone in for this film?
It's much more observational, because I think that's what's most interesting.
Yeah.
And the director as well, because it's also about conversation. The characters that are the hosts of the fictional podcast, which we hope will become a real podcast, are asking the same three questions and just letting people talk. So it wasn't just a straight answer. They contextualized for us.
Oh,
so being able to take a step back and just listen was really important, because it wasn't just about, and the film in general, it's not just about pushing whatever we think forward, but really trying to assess, okay, if there's this much of a split, where is that coming from and why? And what are people actually thinking, as opposed to whatever's coming up in our very curated social media feeds, thanks to the algorithm.
Yes.
And it's also very clear that people, as they're talking about their points of view, a lot of them are so certain that anybody with in their right mind would thinks with them
yeah.
and agrees with what they have to say. So it's it's a nice insight into realizing that there is a much bigger split than we may have previously thought, especially being in our own bubbles with the pandemic. And that was the other thing, as a producer of that film, making it COVID safe was the biggest challenge.
Oh gosh, yeah.
How do we go about getting interviews and keeping cast and crew safe and distance, and can we pull this off with people being masked for the majority of the filming and still have quality sound? So there's a lot of those kind of challenges that I was less concerned about getting enough footage for a feature than I was about like safety and then the quality of what we could actually record. But it all really, I'm really happy with how it turned out. And it's a small, again, strange film that might be subverting people's expectations. But maybe not. I mean, we're pretty open about our progressive values as filmmakers and as people. So maybe they'll be a little surprised at how even-handed we are with a lot of people's perspectives.
Oh, good on you.
Yeah.
And the type of questions that, the free questions, sorry, that you had given or put to the people in the documentary, how do you come up with the free questions and who exactly does that? Because if it's just free questions, I mean, they have to be spot on. So did you come up with the questions, the director, or was there fights and arguments?
No, we came up with it together, and also trying to make sure that they're questions that these young men would ask. So they're like, and they're playing versions of themselves, basically playing themselves, where they want to keep it limited, but also open for whatever people have to say. So the first one was, where were you the last election? Which gave a pretty interesting insight and also helped us understand where all these people were coming from, because it's Times Square, New York City. Mm. You don't ever know where people have come from or coming from on a day or like in their lives. So a lot of people, you know, were not from New York City, or were there the previous year just because they like being in New York City for the elections,
okay,
which I thought was interesting. So the first was, where were you the last election? And the second was, what's most important to you in this election? And the third was, do you think this will be the last election? Which had a lot of interesting responses. Some people laughed and were like, of course, it's not the last election. And then some people were like, you know what? It might be.
Why?
And you'll have to watch to find out.
True. Sorry, spoiler alert. I shouldn't have gone.
Yeah. But it's really fascinating, like the reasons people give, or they're just the gut reactions to some of these questions. And really just how much people will talk when you give them space.
Yeah.
To share what they have to say. And when you don't interrupt.
Yes.
I think what was interesting, there was a lot of protests happening in Times Square on that day, or just like spontaneous debates with people. Because if people have signs saying that they're for or against anybody, it sparks debate, especially among New Yorkers. And how often in observing these spontaneous debates in Times Square, people won't let people finish what they have to say on either side. There's this tendency to jump in with a you're right or you're wrong, instead of really trying to assess, okay, why do you think that? Or let me hear you say more, because I don't understand.
Yeah.
And with our podcasters, it's just let people talk. And it was really surprising. And I think my director, Miguel, is very, he comes from a documentary background. So there's a lot of honoring that person's time and their perspective, whatever it is, to try to see the truth is in there somewhere. And not the truth of like what is right or what is wrong, but of somebody's true emotional like experience can't just be brushed aside. And if we're going to move towards something better, we have to actually listen and figure out what that pathway will be. So the film is exciting for me, because that's the energy put into it. And that's what I hope people get out of it, because we can't really move forward in a way that is going to work for people unless we actually listen to all people. And I think there's a lot of divide still happening for various reasons. I think regaining the ability to really listen and try to see the humanity in everybody, regardless of whether or not you agree with them, is the challenge of life. And it's moving towards hope, which is what I think is beautiful about this film. Moving towards hope while recognizing, wow, there's a lot to be done right now. Yeah. And for the foreseeable future.
I echo your thoughts, but hearing you speak like that, I think maybe you could be a Congress person soon, or senator or something. You got a very good political mind there. I think more and more people need to hear that.
I don't know. I'll stick to movies.
Fair enough. I can understand that. So what can we see from you next? What's coming up next from you?
The last election will be coming out to the festival circuit starting this summer. American Thief is available in North America through Amazon Prime, Voodoo, a lot of different streaming platforms for rental and purchase. And hopefully we'll be doing some more European festivals in the near future. Next up, have a couple of fully scripted narratives.
Oh, great.
One that is set in Chicago called I Don't Dream in Spanish Anymore. And that is, it's fictional, but a lot of emotional truth. It's a very personal personal film. And it's, I guess, thematically, it's about healing generational trauma and inherited trauma. But in terms of like the cool log line that gets people to see it, it's about an expecting mother who has to go on this journey to undo a family curse before her child is born. After seeing the ghost of her own mother.
Wow. Yeah. Who came up with that log line?
It's been a process. I keep on writing and rewriting that log line.
Okay.
So it's about undoing, and it's playing with the idea of what do we think of a curse, and playing with a lot of horror tropes without going fully horror. It's a fun film, but that's going to be shot in Chicago, and it's also a way for me to investigate the idea of assimilation and what happens over generations from an immigrant family, and what's lost and what is gained in that process. So that's one. And then there's another project that I will be co-directing with my partner and the director of American Thief in the last election that is still in development, called A La Tumba, which is To the Grave. And that is a Caribbean revisionist feminist Western that is in the scripting stage right now. So
I've never heard of anything like that. I love your ideas. They're just like completely original. Completely. Wow. How did you think of that?
A lot of things.
Okay. Fair enough.
Just coming from my family's from the Caribbean, and just like, I think growing up, my dad's obsessed with Westerns. Okay. And I like Westerns, but I have a lot of issues with the perspective of Westerns.
Yep,
and really coming at a Western from a different perspective, a very different perspective from like the minority perspective or the native perspective, and also the female perspective, because I feel like those are, it's not what you see the protagonist of a Western to be. So yeah, really flipping it, but at the same time taking kind of like the visuals of the big landscape and the themes of revenge and atonement, but just playing within the genre while subverting it. I just like subverting
No, good, good.
A lot of the things that you expect, and it's all about like what I wish I had seen when I was a kid, or you know, now actually, what I want to see more of.
That's a great way to put it. Wishing that I could see what I saw as a kid. I'm going to think about that myself, actually, because my family are from the Caribbean. Ooh. So, but I've never thought like that. Like I said, maybe like consciously or subconsciously, even though I'm a big advocate for different types of black images, especially Caribbean images. There are just so many of them in film and TV, and second and third Caribbean generation people in Britain, the images are just not what I particularly want to see. But I haven't taken it to the level you have when you're saying Western and feminist and in that way. So that's, you're giving me food for thought. You know, what really kind of big, broad ideas can there be, you know, without consciously thinking or pushing away from the stereotypes, just thinking broader in that sense. But Missy, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. Your work just sounds just brilliant. I like the range. I love the political stance to it as well. The broad, again, political stance going into New York with the free questions that allow people to speak rather than the kind of maybe some of the questions we have here in my country are kind of narrow, and the questions that are put out there to get the response that will get the ratings, and in my opinion, which isn't always helpful. But thanks again for coming. I really, really appreciate it. And I look forward to seeing more from you.
Thank you so much. I look forward to sharing more with you. It's been a pleasure, and I hope to keep in contact with you.
If you like this podcast, share it with friends. Leave a comment in the comment section and hit the subscribe button.
I hope this podcast really influenced, inspired, and helped many of us out there that make work that's politically minded or socially conscious. Because if that's the way you think and that's what's important to you, I hope you're able to navigate yourself through this indie film world and make your film. If you want to find out more about Missy, check the show notes. There'll be links to her website and a whole lot more. So thank you. Thank you once again for listening to Filmmaking Conversations with me, Damien Swaby.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.